Hi, I'm Connor, and this is Learn English with Aorist, a podcast where I chat to native English speakers in real, unscripted English, and then, step by step, explore the language used. This episode is the first in a mini-series about the Cambridge exams, the advanced and the first, what used to be called the CAE and the FCE. So over the next four episodes, we'll be looking at all of the aspects of the exams and everything you need to get a good score. Joining me this week is Rob, and we're going to focus on the speaking exam. We'll give you some tips and explain what the examiners are looking for, and along the way, you'll learn lots of useful vocabulary and expressions you can use in the exam. And don't forget, if you miss anything, all the vocab, grammar, and other material is at everestlanguageschool.com/podcast. So that's everestlanguageschool.com/podcast. So the speaking exams for the advanced and the first are very, very similar. They take, 15 minutes for the advanced exam and 14 minutes for the first, but basically they're the same. There are two candidates in each exam, so it's you and another candidate, and you're talking to an examiner, and there's another examiner in the room as well. And it's divided into four parts. So the first part is the kind of easy part. It's the part where you're supposed to, well, maybe not relax, but it's the part where you are supposed to be at ease, and you just start talking about some personal things. It's going to be things like your job, your country, your hobbies, relatively easy questions to answer. Although, as we talk about, that doesn't mean you can't give complicated answers, but the topics are very familiar and they're usually sort of personal. So this goes on for 2 minutes. You then move on to the longer turn where you're going to be talking about some pictures or photographs that you're given. So you have to talk for about a minute on your own. You'll be given instructions and you talk for a minute. And then the other candidate will be asked a quick follow-up question about your image. And then it changes around. So the other candidate talks for a minute and then you're asked a quick follow-up question about their image. So important in part two is to actually listen to the other candidate. So part three is quite similar in time to part two. Take about 4 minutes. And this is called the collaborative task. So that's the important word, collaborative. You are collaborating, working with the other candidate. So you're given instructions and there are written prompts which you have to look at and then you have to use them for a discussion. So it takes about a minute for the examiner to explain everything. And then you talk for about 2 minutes or so when you have to talk about what you see in front of you and the area. And then you have about a minute to kind of come to a conclusion or to make a decision, I suppose. And this takes about 4 minutes. And then the last section, section four, is a longer, broader discussion which comes out of section three. So the interviewer leads the discussion and it's related to part three, but this is very much about you really showing what you can do. And you have to talk to the interviewer, the examiner, but you also have to talk to the other candidate and bring them into the discussion as well. So these are the four parts: a very quick interview, a longer sort of monologue, a collaborative task, and then a further open discussion. Now let's get to the interview with Rob. So the first thing we talk about are the five different criteria that you will be judged on in the advanced or first exam. What is the examiner looking for?
Hi, Rob.
Hey, Connor.
So we're going to have a look at some different things, some different tips and different ideas. But generally speaking, I suppose, what are examiners looking for when it comes to your speaking?
Yeah, well, they want to get a good sense of your level of English through your speaking. So they're looking at a lot of different things. So, for example, they're listening, trying to hear the level of your grammar. So that's one of the things that they're going to be assessing when you're in there. So if you're using kind of more sophisticated grammatical structures and that kind of thing, it's going to bring up your mark.
So you kind of need to show off a little bit. If you have especially for exams like the first and the advanced, you have a good level of English, so you need to show that you have a good level. And yeah, the examiner will be giving you a mark out of five. They have five areas that they're looking at, and they give each area a mark out of five, five being the top. And the first one, as you say, is grammar, what they call grammatical resource. So what sort of things can you do to sort of show them that you have great grammar?
You know, having practiced things in class is important. So, you know, having looked at particular structures. So when you're going into the exam, having in your head that, okay, I'm going to try to use a conditional sentence here, or, you know, remember that when I'm speaking about certain things in the past, that that's an opportunity to use maybe past perfect or something like that. That's important. So to think of, you know, what are some of the more advanced structures in English, and just to be confident using some of them.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're happy, you can use the structure correctly, especially things like verb tenses, you should just use them. Go for it.
Absolutely.
And even if you make a few mistakes, it's not the end of the world. So that's kind of the first area is grammar. The second one is what they call lexical resource. So what do they mean by lexical resource?
So that's really about your vocabulary. So again, you know, this is your chance to show off what you know. So don't just keep repeating the same words and speaking in very simple terms. You know, what I always say to students is when they're going for the first or they're going for the advanced, try to be more descriptive in your language. You know, any opportunity you have to use more adjectives, more adverbs, go for it. And, you know, really try and paint a picture with what you're saying, and that will force you to use more advanced vocabulary.
Yeah, and lots of synonyms as well to try. And if you have a simple word, you can kind of think, well, look, do I have a more interesting, more unfamiliar word for something like that? Not doesn't have to be anything crazy, but it might be just as a case where, I don't know, the examiner asks you about your hobbies and you say, yeah, I have several pastimes, and you just use a different word, you know, rather than just saying hobbies again, because that's not a new word. The examiner has just said it. So I guess really you're looking for a wide range of vocabulary that's accurate and appropriate, and, you know, is the right vocabulary for the task and for the situation.
Yeah. And, you know, just thinking about that in terms of hobbies and pastimes, they are often things that will come up naturally when you're speaking. So again, it's just important to make sure that if you have some, you know, unusual hobbies or pastimes, that you have some, you know, unusual vocabulary to go with that, because that will expand your answers and your vocabulary.
Yeah. And don't introduce the topic if you don't have the vocabulary to discuss it. Don't say you love windsurfing and then have no dust vocabulary to describe windsurfing.
Yeah, or bring up, you know, The Matrix as your favorite movie and then have to try and explain the plot.
Exactly. Yeah. Just do yourself a favor and move the conversation towards things you know about.
So these are the first two things you'll be judged on, grammar and vocabulary. We mentioned that you should show off. So this is the phrasal verb, to show off, to demonstrate that you're really good at something. We sometimes use the verb to boast. In other areas, maybe showing off is not such a good thing, but in the speaking exam, you are definitely trying to show off. You know, you'd want to show the examiner how wonderful, how amazing your English is. Next up then, you've got discourse management. So this is how you control and direct the conversation.
And then talking about kind of moving conversations and leading conversations in certain directions. The third area is what they call discourse management. So what do they mean by discourse management?
So that's more about how you're structuring your answers. So how you're linking different ideas together, you know, putting your answers in a specific order, moving the conversation in the direction you want to go. So in this part, it's important to think about linking words, linking phrases, that kind of thing, and also to look at some specific phrases that you can use when you're hesitating or trying to think of a new idea. This is something that I'd always recommend to students. So rather than just sitting there going you know, that you have some learned, this is a place where you can have some learnt off phrases that you can, you know, confidently use.
Yeah. So just something like, well, that's a good question, let me think about that for a second, or, oh, interesting, you should say that because blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So it's absolutely fine to pause. It's absolutely fine to say, or whatever. And that's what native speakers do in every language. Yeah. But there comes a point where you need to just say something. And if you're pausing for an unnaturally long time, or you are, I guess you're not really making very much sense. That a lot of this is about coherence as well. If you start talking and the examiner just doesn't really know what you're talking about, you're going to lose marks, because, you know, making grammar mistakes, making vocabulary mistakes where they don't hinder understanding, where they don't stop the examiner from understanding you, is not actually too bad. It's when you get to the place where what you're saying is just incoherent that you're going to get very low marks, especially on that sort of discourse management kind of area. So the fourth category is very self-explanatory. It's pronunciation. So how do you make sure your pronunciation is good?
Yeah, so that's one thing that students often worry about is the fact that they maybe have an accent or something, you know, because they're from a different country, but that's completely natural. It's fine to have an accent, but what they're looking at in pronunciation is really that what you're saying is clear and intelligible, and that the, you know, that the meaning isn't lost from you pronouncing something in the wrong way. So this is something that is definitely hard to learn on your own at home. I think this is really where students benefit from coming to a class, you know, being in a class with a teacher in front of you, and the teacher will, if something doesn't make sense, they will correct you. And, you know, putting yourself in situations where you need to use spoken English, and, you know, very quickly you'll learn where your pronunciation is stopping somebody from understanding you. So,
like you said, there's a big difference between your accent and your pronunciation. You know, if you are from Germany and you have a German accent, that is absolutely fine. You know, everybody has an accent in their own language. So I have an Irish accent and that's okay. But if you're putting the emphasis on the wrong parts of words, if you are mispronouncing certain sounds, if you are confusing easy to confuse words like, I don't know, soup and soap or island and Iceland or things like that, then these are not accent problems. These are pronunciation problems, and they obviously stop, or they allow the listener to misunderstand you. So this is an issue. This is not one of the things you can sort of study the night before, you know.
So discourse management and pronunciation are core parts of what the examiner will be looking for. And you heard a few useful words here too as well. We had the verb to learn something off. We often say to learn something by heart as well. So this is to learn something really, really well that you can repeat it back again perfectly. And we also use the word to hinder. So mistakes which hinder understanding, mistakes which stop you from understanding something. We very often use the expression whether something is a help or a hindrance. So whether it helps you or it stops you from doing something. They both begin with H, help or hindrance. And we have just one more category which you will be judged under.
The last one is interactive communication. So obviously, interaction is a big part of the Cambridge exams. Unlike something like the IELTS exam, where you're only interacting with a single examiner, in the Cambridge exams, the advanced and the first, you're talking to the examiner, but you're also talking to another student, sometimes two other students if they do a group of three. So you need to be able to interact with everybody. It's multiple or multi-directional communication. So what do you need to be able to do to get high interactive communication scores?
Yeah, so in this part of the exam, you need to be able to, yeah, as you say, engage with the other person or the other people in the room. So again, this is another place where you can have some sentences, you know, practice, rehearsed, and you would be able then to ask the other students for their opinion on something, ask them to contribute. Also, it's important here to be listening to what they're saying so that you can, you know, draw a response out from them, or, you know, build on what they've just said, or that kind of thing. So
yeah, the worst thing is when the other student is talking and the examiner says, and so what do you think? And you go, sorry, what? Was somebody talking? Or,
and that's very easy to do, because you're in an exam and you're nervous and it's stressful and you're just sitting there thinking about, right, what am I going to say next?
Yeah, and especially in that part three, the sort of collaborative task where You need to be encouraging the other speaker, asking them questions, listening to what they say. You know, you're working together towards an answer and towards a conclusion. So you're going to get particularly, you know, marks for interactive communication are going to come everywhere, but particularly in that part three section, I think.
Yeah.
So these are the five areas which you'll be judged on. This is what the examiner is thinking about every time you speak. Rob and I then talked about a few tips and strategies to help you get a good score. A few things to remember.
The first one is to, under no circumstances, use monosyllabic one-word answers, and definitely no silence. There's nothing worse than silence in an exam.
Yeah, you want to make the job easy for the examiner. So, you know, they want to hear you speaking. They want to hear your best English. So just, you know, go for it.
So if I ask you on the maybe part one, so Rob, who is your favorite artist? And what might you say? Or what might you not say?
Well, the answer some students will give in a case like this would be, you know, what's your favorite artist? Picasso. And just stop there. And, you know, this is something I experience because I do speaking tests every week. And, you know, sometimes I'm trying to test the students' level of English and I ask them a question like that and they give a one-word answer. And I have no idea what their level of English is then. But if they say something like, I'm a huge fan of modernist and cubist art and my favorite artist is Picasso, then I've got, okay, this person has some specific vocabulary that they can use. You know, they've structured a full sentence and
and like you can go too far. You don't want to say, well, actually I have 8 favorite artists and I'll now listen to you in order of preference and go on for 5 minutes. It needs to be a natural response to, or a relatively natural response to the question. So whether that might be something very specific because you do really like art, or it might be something like, well, to be honest, I'm not really sure because I'm not that into art, but, you know, if I had to choose one artist, maybe I'd say Picasso, or, you know, something like this, a relatively natural and kind of honest answer to the question. And similarly, in relation to that, you know, just because the question is simple, it doesn't mean that the answer has to be simple. So, you know, if I say to you, what do you do, Rob? You might say,
I'm a teacher.
Full stop.
Yeah.
You know, and again, this is just kind of simple question, simple answer. And yes, in maybe in a more natural conversation, I might say what you do, you say I'm a teacher, and then I ask another question. But better to just answer with more information, give the examiner something else. So maybe if I asked you then, oh, hey, Rob, so what do you do?
Well, originally I trained as an accountant, but for the last few years I've been working as a teacher and have found it so interesting.
Or something like that, yes, you know, so. Yeah. And, you know, some of these answers can be a little bit rehearsed or practiced, because there are certain subjects that are going to come up very frequently. Your job, your native country, how you find living in, you know, the country that you're in now, if you are in one, and so on and so forth. Hobbies, that sort of thing. So for part one, it's going to be personal information about things about yourself. And for part two, then, you're going to be describing things. You're going to be talking about pictures in both the first and the advanced. So what kind of language are you going to use for this?
Well, if you think about it, you're going to be looking at 2 or 3 pictures. So you're going to have to be able to compare things. So comparative language is going to be really important here. So, you know, phrases like on the one hand, or while, whereas, these kind of things are good phrases that to use when you're trying to speak about 2 things at once.
Yeah, so all of these kind of words which join 2 parts of a sentence or 2 clauses together. So you might look at a picture of somebody surfing and somebody sailing, and you might say, whereas the man in this picture is surfing, the man in the other picture is sailing, or, you know, these kind of comparative words, and comparative adjectives as well. Big, bigger, biggest. This one is smaller, this one is nicer, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And then opposites as well. So, you know, one thing could be big, one's small, one's old, one young, you know, things like that. Any kind of comparative language so that you can talk about the 2 or 3 pictures.
You can kind of push your vocabulary rather than saying big and small. You might say huge or massive or enormous or tiny or these kind of words as well. And then obviously you're going to contrast things, you're going to compare things. So some things are going to be the same. Both this and this are whatever, you know, in both pictures, like, you know, this is evident, or that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You don't need a huge amount of descriptive language. I think this is maybe a mistake that some students make, where they just describe the pictures. In this picture, I can see a man and he is sitting on a chair and the chair is red. And that's not really what you're trying to do in this. You're being asked a specific question. So you'll get the pictures and you'll be asked a question, like, or two questions, you know, like, how do you think the people feel in this photo, or something like that. So you're being speculative, maybe, might, could, and you're using lots of kind of comparative language.
So these are the first three tips. No monosyllabic answers. Don't give simple answers, even if the question is simple. And really learn your comparative language. And this is a quick grammar point I wanted to look at this week. So make sure you can properly use the grammar around linking words or discourse markers. So there's no point using a word like despite unless you know how to use the grammar that goes with despite. So let's just look at four useful words. We have although, while, whereas, and despite. So imagine in the exam you are looking at two photos. One is a supermarket and the other is a farmer's market. So you're looking at comparing and contrasting these two types of places to buy food, a supermarket and a farmer's market. So you might use a word like although for contrast. So you might say, although most people like the convenience of a supermarket, I prefer shopping in markets. So you've got one thing and then you've got a contrast. And you can use while or whereas in the same way. While most people like the convenience of a supermarket, I prefer shopping in markets. Whereas most people like the convenience of a supermarket, I prefer shopping in markets. So although, while, and whereas can all be used very interchangeably here to talk about a contrast. If we give a concession, we concede something. We say, okay, fine, that's true, but here's another thing. Then we often use although and while as well. So although farmers markets will often have organic food, they can be very expensive. You know, while farmers markets will often have organic food, they can be very expensive. So we can use although or while here for a concession, but we don't use whereas. And then there's the word despite, which is different in grammatical structure from the other three. So although and while and whereas, they have this two-part structure. You say, although, blah, 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 blah. You know, you have this kind of two parts to the structure. But the grammar of it is straightforward. Despite is a little bit more difficult to remember because you need to use ing. So you might have a sentence like, despite being quite expensive, I think farmers' markets still represent good value for money. You can't say, despite they are quite expensive. You have to use the gerund, the ing form. So despite being quite expensive. You can follow despite by ing, or you can follow it by a noun. So you could say something like, despite the fact that they are quite expensive, I think farmers markets still represent good value for money. And this is fine as well, although it's very long, despite the fact that they are, instead of despite being. So we generally prefer to use ing because, you know, it's just shorter. So despite is followed by ing. And remember as well, it's not despite of, it's just despite. This is often easily confused with another very similar phrase, in spite of, where we do use the word of. So don't get those confused as well. So these are just four very useful words that you might use to compare and contrast different photographs or use in any part of the exam, really. So let's get back to the tips.
Tip number four then would be to make sure you can agree and disagree, because you're going to be agreeing and disagreeing with the other, possibly in other sections, but mostly really in section three, the collaborative task. So you need some, well, firstly, sort of nice ways to be in disagreement rather than saying, no, that's wrong, yeah, or whatever. So what sort of things could you use?
Yeah, so you could, you know, phrases like, oh, yeah, I see what you mean, but blah, blah, blah. So then, you know, bringing in contradictory opinion, but not in an aggressive way or anything like that, just kind of continuing the conversation. Or I see your point, but I think something different, and then go on and, you know, explain what you think. things like this are, you know, they're ways to, you know, have a natural kind of conversation, to present new ideas in the conversation without being, you know, rude or aggressive or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. And it shows you're listening, and it shows that you have kind of thought about how to formulate the question, your discourse management, your interactive communication. These things are coming into play. That kind of brings us on to number five then, which is to learn keywords or learn key expressions, but not to, as we say, to rote learn, to sort of learn things without understanding them. So if the examiner asks you, where are you from? And you have this big, long answer learnt off, and you say, I am from this town, which is in the middle of the country, and it is very nice, and I love it. You know, it sounds really boring and robotic and learnt. Whereas if you just maybe learn like a key phrase, so maybe you live in a very small village in the countryside, so it's a rural village, and you just learn the phrase rural village, then, you know, maybe you can drop that into the conversation somewhere. And some of the key phrases are maybe like the ones you just said. Yeah, I see what you mean. Or I don't think I'd agree with you there. You know, phrases for agreeing, disagreeing, comparing.
Yeah, stalling as well. So, you know, that's an interesting question. Or, oh, I've never thought about that. Or, you know, oh, that's not something I know too much about, but blah,
yeah,
blah, blah.
Yeah.
So just anything to give yourself a little bit of time when you need to think. Those sort of phrases are good to learn off.
They're essential, yeah. And they make your language, even though they're learnt off, they make your language sound quite natural, because that's what people do say. They don't just immediately answer questions. We need a bit of time to think.
So, yeah, stalling, giving yourself time is really, really essential. That's an interesting question. Let me see. Is going to be so much better than just saying, or something like this. So, stalling, giving yourself time. And now we're at the final tip.
And so the final point then is, as we've kind of mentioned a little bit already, is to listen, which is hard because you need to listen to the examiner and listen to exactly what's being asked. Although, remember as well that they'll ask the questions and they'll put a page in front of you for part two or part three, but the questions will be on the page as well, so you can see them in front of you. But you need to listen to the examiner, and you also need to listen to the other person, your co-candidate in the exam, which is not always that easy.
Yeah. And, you know, you're listening to them. As we said before, you're trying to build on their answers and that kind of thing. But also, you know, it's your job as well to elicit things from them. So you're trying to help them to speak as well. And by doing that, you're showing your own level of English. So, you know, when you've given your opinion on something, if they haven't chimed in with something that naturally themselves, you can ask them for their opinion. So, you know, you could ask them, what are your thoughts on this, or how do you feel about it, and try and get them to speak as well.
Yeah, especially for part four, which is really a long discussion between the two candidates with prompts from the examiner. It's not always examiner to a candidate, then examiner to another candidate, then examiner back to the original candidate. You know, it should be candidate to candidate discussion. So those kind of phrases are really good. You're listening, and then you're saying, oh, and do you agree? Or, I mean, I'm not sure about this myself. Well, what would you think? Or that sort of thing. So listen, learn some phrases off, be ready to agree and disagree, to bring people into the conversation, to use lots of comparative language, and to show off, to use all the language that you have, and you will get an amazing score.
It's that easy.
It's that easy, yeah. So I think that's it, is it?
Yeah.
Good. All good? All right. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you, Connor.
And that's it. Lots of tips and strategies for your Cambridge speaking exam. And hopefully you have a very clear idea of what the examiner is looking for, how the exam is structured, and what you need to do to get a high score. And don't forget, for all the vocabulary, the expressions, the grammar, you can visit the website, everestlanguageschool.com/podcast. And that's it. That's the first part of our Cambridge exam mini-series. We'll be covering all the other areas over the next 3 weeks. Special thanks to my guest Rob, and thanks also to Nouveau Noise, who provided the theme music for the show. And if you like the show, do me a favour. Take a screenshot, a screen grab of your phone right now, and send it to one person you think would like this podcast. That would be great. It would really help get the word out and help the show find more listeners. So thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you next week.